Now, today's sermon is it's just going to more or less be a collection of methods to combat the evolutionist I have found to be quite effective over the years. Lately, they have been a bit active, so I felt it necessary to respond in a more permanent manner so as to have a page to link to when this topic arises, and hopefully once this is posted online, it can be useful for some of those out there that are sharing their faith in a creator God. So, evolutionists say that at one time there was absolutely nothing in the entire universe. They declare that after a Big Bang and then millions and millions of years of explosive activity from that Big Bang, that we now have planets, moons, stars, plants, animals, humans, whatever, you know. And what amazes me is how it goes from absolutely nothingness one eon and then billions of planets, moons, stars, plants, animals, humans the next. I mean, it just always seemed a bit strange to me. I guess that was some well-loaded bang. But here's a quick method you can try the next time you run across an evolutionist. Ask them to explain their reasons for believing such things, but do so in a gentle manner, as gentle a manner as possible, so as to keep the discourse going. You know, don't get up in their face, and, you know, of course, you know, most of us understand the character and the meekness of Christ. It works the best, you know. So, you know, you'll find they will first display all the confidence of an expert. I don't care if they're 15 years old or 50 years old. They'll show all the confidence of an expert. But then within just a few minutes, you'll hear them use words like perhaps, maybe, could be, possibly, you know, to share their beliefs. And finally, when they have completely lost all confidence to fabricate, you know, more so-called facts, they're simply going to say, I'm not an expert. Now, I have to say that it's got to be one of the most amazing things to behold. When you see this go from, like, almost night and day right in front of your face within 5 minutes, but this is not so much their fault as it is human nature to respond in this way if you believe something you know you cannot prove. One canny thing you may also notice is they use the same words most uneducated preachers out there use when teaching prophecy. They do this because, like evolutionists, they truly have no idea as to what they're speaking. When it gets down to brass tacks, what you'll find is they seek to convince others by their own lack of understanding, and that always boggled my mind, even as a young Christian. Because I thought if you're using words like possibly, maybe, and perhaps, it means you really don't know. And so I have to go and look for someone who does know bye-bye. You know, that's always been my mindset. And I praise God for that, too, because that's what got me in the Word, finally, eventually, to understand it and believe it. I originally got in the Word to shut up all the Catholic bashers because I was a Catholic. But then after about 18 months, I realized that they were telling me the truth. And I was just giving, you know, name-calling. So, and this is one more amazing truth that glorifies, you know, our God, by the way, the way this all works out. With the Creator God, He seeks that we completely understand His truth He has by our own ability to reason. He doesn't seek to con us in any way, shape, or form when His truth is shared with us. He simply shares the facts and lets us see the truth for what it is. It's kind of like the great controversy that's going on right now between, you know, Christ and Satan. You know, there's no forcing going on here. Okay, you have your say, and then he'll have his say. You know, like the Lord Jesus will share his truth, and Satan, of course, will share his lies. And like Isaiah says in 1:18, when we come to our Lord, it says, "Come now and let us reason together," saith the Lord. He doesn't sit there and, you know, beat you over the brow and say, "Listen up," you know, lock you in a chair and handcuff you or torture you like the Catholic Church did for 1,260 years, exactly like Daniel predicted. With evolution, you are extremely hard-pressed to come up with any facts to scrutinize. Literally, all of it is based on circumstantial evidence at best. And a lot of it is just plain guesswork. Many have melded the so-called science of evolution into what science can prove to be mutation now. The evolutionist knows they cannot prove anything evolved, so they borrow facts dealing with mutation and tag them evolution to win an argument. Kind of like saying the crayfish or those salamanders that they find in the caves evolved into blind crayfish and salamanders, when in fact they simply mutated due to lack of light. Like, do my hands evolve as I grow calluses from swinging a hammer? Or did I grow calluses to protect my hands? We'll get back to that in a minute. So, but anyway, I saw this video some time ago. where a preacher asks some people on the street questions about evolution to get a general idea of the mindset running rampant today. It was just really cool to watch. When they, and that's why I shared this stuff about the confidence off, because I couldn't believe, I remember what I saw on the street when I did this, and it was just the same thing that he was dealing with when he was doing it. When he first asked the people if they believed in it, evolution, all of them displayed 100% unadulterated confidence in their belief as expected. But as the questioning continued, and it was easy questions too. I mean, it wasn't no, you know, talking about any kind of scientific theologies or anything. It was just basic stuff. As that question continued on, you saw all sorts of anxiety in their comments as well as insecurity. All of them used the term, I don't know, more than once when responding. And then, yeah, words like probably, perhaps, maybe, could be, and so on and so forth were used repeatedly by each and every one of them as well. And when the questions got real tough, they all stated in their own words that they weren't experts to try and stop the questions. And again, I got to tell you, it's an amazing thing to watch, to transpire right there in front of your face. In just a few moments, all of them went from absolute confident defenders of evolution to people who admitted quite boldly and repeatedly, I might add, that they had no clue as to its origin. Yet, they still claimed to be staunch believers in saying. So, if you ever want to try this out on your own, as I've done before and hope to do again, all you need to do is have a set of questions already in mind ready to go. And I got a list of them here. In the number two section of the page that you're on here, and after they share their faith in evolution by using guesswork and speculation, let them know you just ask them three or four or five questions, how many ever you get away with. They simply just couldn't answer. They will start, hopefully, thinking. They will start thinking and hopefully get to a point, that they're going to be open to your comments. So a few of these questions you might want to try asking, and they're basic. Some of them get a little bit intense. If you got someone that seems to be intelligent and starts coming up with all these $20 words and stuff like that and try to browbeat you into thinking that you're wrong and they're right about evolution, there are some heavy-duty ones I got in here. So, but for example, what made up the original matter that caused the Big Bang? They're going to say, I don't know. How did life start after this Big Bang? Now, some people might throw out some conjecture and stuff like that and start throwing all sorts of theories out there, but most will say they don't know. By what means did the code of life and the enzymes to create the code originate? Which came first, the code to make the enzymes or the enzymes to make the code? And I like to use this one on the people that show some, intelligence, and they're trying to use their intelligence to intimidate. And so you hit them with that one. Another one is, where is the fossil evidence showing one organism merging into the next? And we're not talking about simple mutations either. All right? Like a dog, like one dog's a German Shepherd and the next dog's a hound. It's just, that's like, they're both dogs, but it's just mutations or whatever, or variations. The next one is, where is the evidence where mutated or mutation creates unique and new structures rather than modified ones, like the dogs, like I just said? Why is there a missing link for absolutely every supposed evolved species on Earth? There's not one fossil that exists. Not one. How can they all have missing links? And they did a scientific experiment on this years ago. If 50 years of mutating fruit flies has produced only fruit flies, how does mutation create new species? And what is the best evidence that shows the main theory of evolution to be fact? You're going to get a lot of I don't know with this here. So, one thing you may want to notice right off is, when you speak with evolutionists, it is that they only have faith in their theories and supporting scientists. It's as if evolution has become a religion, and they use what we could actually define as faith to support it. Scientific reality is, evolution is based 100% on theory and assumption, or supposition. Amazing thing is, Christianity has far more evidence than evolution could ever hope to attain. I mean, Christian prophecy alone blows their doors clean off. Sad truth here is, I have found that most that believe the theory of evolution simply because scientists push it. Now, because they're supposed scientists, most people would rather associate their beliefs in what they believe to be the ideas from smart people This way, they can ride their intelligence as if it's their own. This is a common human response. This has gone on since you were a little kid in the playground all the way up until you're an adult. People do this their whole lives. They think if they echo the words of what the world calls intelligent people, they will appear intelligent by proxy. The reason this is done is because human nature is such that no one wants to be considered stupid, or worse yet, a religious fanatic. When you have supposed men of science declaring creation to be, like creationism or creation itself to be idiotic, most will choose to agree with them so they won't be looked upon as idiots. Because a scientist said creation is idiotic, so if you believe in creation, you're an idiot. No one likes to be tagged an imbecile. As most of us learned during grade school, peer pressure works well in all forms. It can be carried through life in every deceptive manner known to man. This scientific theory of evolution is just one more form of peer pressure. So, getting to the meat of the matter. One major problem I found with evolution is that there are no fossils to show an ape evolving into a man, a dinosaur evolving into a bird, like they say, or a fish evolving into a horse, or a worm into a turtle, whatever, I don't know. But they dress up this obvious lack of evidence by calling the lack thereof the missing link. That fact alone confirms they have been admitting for exactly 150 years right now, or maybe 151 years, they've been admitting for 150 years they have no proof. Yet many people still believe their theories because it's in your grade school books. It's in encyclopedias. It's on Planet Earth. When you watch the series Planet Earth, they always talk about, everybody talks about evolution as it's fact. They keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it because they're preaching for Satan. This method of placing a far-fetched fabrication as an answer to a question is very effectual. In fact, Cyrus Schofield used this method of deception in his Bible commentary of 1910. He filled the Bible with all sorts of strange out-of-context assumptions for prophetic fulfillments, and when he hit his proverbial brick in the wall, as well as the evolutionists do with their missing link fabrication, he declared a gap theory as a way to make his assumptions appear plausible. But plausibility is not fact. Like the missing link fiasco, it's guesswork at best. I have to ask, how can there be so many missing links? How can I can and will have given them the benefit of the doubt here if they can prove a missing link for perhaps a worm evolving into a lizard or even a dinosaur into a bird, if that's all the missing links there were. But what about the mountainous stack of missing links running rampant through their theories? If each and every single so-called evolved species has a missing link, then I need to ask when and how did all these missing links come up missing? I mean, was there some massive time-altering comet or black hole that sucked each and every one of them and only them, because there's all the other fossils are still there, but into some fifth dimension? Sadly, here they can't even answer. Many say evolution is a slow process and will appear as a butterfly's wings getting smaller or a newt's tongue getting sticky or something. I don't know, but that's not evolution. That's adaptation or even mutation. Like the 50 years of laboratory-controlled experiments releasing their findings recently about fruit flies. The flies did adapt and even mutate, yes, but in the end, and during the middle and at the beginning, they simply remained fruit flies. Nothing more, nothing less. Just like a dog can be either a terrier or a hound, both are still dogs. Strangely enough, they still use these experiments as a basis to prove evolution. And you know what that means? They have literally dropped their original definition of evolution and picked up mutation and tagged it evolution in its place so as to finally have a place to argue that carries facts. That's pretty tricky, yeah, but no less a lie, just the same. The reality is those fruit flies never evolved into birds. They never evolved into horses, elephants, or any more than Fido did. I mean, they didn't even evolve into a house fly or a horse fly for that matter. They simply remained fruit flies. Sure, some were a little bigger than others, but they were fruit flies. You know, and we've all seen the drawings of the apes emerging to man in encyclopedias over the years. I'm sure, the Walk of Shame? The Walk of Evolution, I think they call it, but it's actually the Walk of Shame because they stick their foot in that one. What most fail to realize is that those drawings are just that, drawings. Okay, no fossil proof was ever given to back any of those drawings up. And yes, school books and the encyclopedias still state their findings as fact. However, as technology advanced over the years, we found some very interesting facts that no scientist can refute. For example, Nebraska Man. He's one of the guys on the list there, right? Walking across the page. He was nothing more than an artist's depiction of a scientist's made-up theory. All of that so-called Nebraska Man, all of that evidence was pure fiction. His arms, his legs, his body size, his shape, his color, his cranial structure, his hair, his facial features, whatever that, you know, whatever, you know, they were all drawn up from a single tooth they found one day. How they got all that stuff is beyond me, but they did it all from a tooth. And not too long after that drawing was made, they discovered the rest of that skeleton that carried that tooth. And to their shame, they found out that it was actually the tooth of an extinct pig. Yet, Nebraska Man still stands upright and proud in all those evolutionary circles. Not long after that, another image in the so-called evolutionary chain of events between man and ape called Piltdown Man was found to be the remains of a modern ape. What's worse, Neanderthal Man was soon found to be a modern man who suffered from severe arthritis. That's why he was hunched over. They thought he was some ape learning how to walk because he had a hunch. But he had severe arthritis because our technology got to the point where we can understand what we were looking at now. All their theories have been shot down by fellow scientists, and still they have all these missing links in science books to this day. Perhaps they need to change the name from science to chaos. Some people still believe we evolved from apes because apes look like us. This is one thing I love to use on the street, wherein it usually gets the evolutionist to state, "I'm not an expert," quite often. Before I bring up the evolution of the ape to man theory, I like to seed the conversation. I like to get them to put their own theories to the test, while at the same time offer myself a rock-hard method to prove evolution false. And amazing as it may seem, you can actually get them to freely give you that ammo right there before you need it. What do I mean? Ask them like this. Do you believe when a species evolves, the old form of the species dies off permanently? Almost 100% of the time, they will give you a resounding yes. Okay, the question is, do you believe when something evolves from one species to the next, the old version is dead, gone, extinct? And they all say yes, right? Then I ask them, do you believe we've evolved from apes? If they are quick-minded, they may just walk off realizing that you just got them in a trick bag. They cannot answer without exposing themselves. But if they don't catch it right off, they'll say, yes, they do believe we evolved from apes. With that said, I simply ask them, why are there still apes here? You just told me that, and all evolutionists believe, when something evolves from one species to the next, the preceding species drops dead and is extinct. But those are apes in the zoo, aren't they? And in jungles? It's here you may find an end to the argument. If the evolved species stands supreme while the previous form has died off, then man could never have evolved from apes, because apes still live. Another strange thing about evolutionists is their political incorrectness. If the evolutionist is a woman, read her the following excerpt I'm going to read you. I couldn't believe it when I saw this. This is from The Descent of Man, written in 1871 in London by John Murray. This is on paragraph 2, page 327. It says, the chief distinction in the intellectual powers of the two sexes, talking about men and women, is shown by man attaining to a higher eminence in whatever he takes up than women can attain, whether requiring deep thought, reason, or imagination, or merely the use of the senses and hands. In other words, the scientist is stating that man has evolved further than women in all things. Will the woman you just asked agree with her trusted leaders? If she doesn't, will she now denounce evolution? I also found quotes regarding the evolutionist thoughts on the human races on the earth at present. Reading them would only anger some people, and sadden others. So I decided I wasn't going to share them. Me and Fran were talking about this a couple, 3 days ago, and she more or less brought it up, and I agree. I'm not going to share it. It's just racist. quite racist, as a matter of fact. To summarize, the founding fathers of the evolutionary theory believed some races would eventually be replaced by natural selection because they believe other races have evolved further than they did. With that said, is it any wonder we eventually saw men that believed in evolution, like Hitler, arriving, that seek to do away with the so-called lesser race because he thought he was the superior race, like Darwin taught? I ask, are not their hateful methods contradicting their own belief system in natural selection? It makes me laugh when I think about this, seriously, because they're saying the other species are going to die off by natural selection, but yet they're going around killing them in an unnatural manner. I mean, he killed 6 million Jews, right? So if he thinks they're the lesser race, and they're going to die by natural selection anyway, why is he going out there and unnaturally killing them? I mean, he just defeats his own theology. How can you preach one thing and do another and still be preaching as you believe it? You know, kind of like the TV preachers, the way they jump from one topic to the next. So I ask, why do they think this way? Why do they try so hard to convince people evolution is sound? And by the way, both John Paul II and Benedict the 16th stated in writing that evolution is scientifically sound. Benedict said it twice. He just said it recently, a month or two ago. Yet, even the Catholic Bible, with its thousands of verses missing, says God created Adam and Eve. He didn't see that they came out of primordial ooze. He says he formed them out of the dirt. But Sir Arthur Keith, who wrote the foreword for Darwin's 100th anniversary edition, you know, the book, which was like 50 years ago, he said, evolution is unproved and unprovable. Now think about this. This is the man that wrote the foreword to Darwin's, what was that book called? Origin of the Species. So he says, evolution is unproved and unprovable. We believe only because the only alternative is special creation. And that is unthinkable. In other words, the only reason they believe in, this is his words, the only reason he believes in evolution is because the alternative would be to believe in a creator God, and he just don't want nothing to do with that. It's unthinkable. They simply hate the idea of a creator God. To admit his existence is to admit they are in sin and in need of a savior. They hate the idea that they are to be held accountable for their choices in life. Now, these are the leaders. I'm not talking about the evolutionists today, because a lot of people think that evolution and Christianity walk hand in hand. When the Creator God said, let there be light, in Genesis chapter 1, some can't seem to wrap their brains around the idea that this is possible. Some will actually argue that even God appeared after the Big Bang as well. Yet, some years ago, I watched a scientific experiment wherein the scientists decided to use all that was recorded in Genesis to see if, in fact, it was possible to happen as God said. So they took a large sonar device, placed it in a dark room with absolutely no light, along with a beaker of water. They did this because all that stated to be in existence at the time God said, let there be light, in Genesis chapter 1, was God himself and the water. Because Genesis chapter 1, verses 2 and 3 says, and the earth was without form and void, and the darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. Right? So, with special cameras, they recorded the events as they transpired. They turned up the sound and pointed the sonar device at the large beaker of water, and to their amazement, a small bubble started to form in the center of the water. Within a few moments, that bubble started to glow white hot. And all they used was that which was stated in Genesis to present at the same, to be present at the same time as the creation of light. And they did this with every aspect of Genesis. And I found this on, this information on Dr. Carl Baugh's website. It's at creationevidence.org for those of you listening on the radio. But let me just share a few facts that is honest. I mean, there's tons and tons and tons of this stuff. His videos alone are like 5 hours. He doesn't even touch the tip of the iceberg, but he shows, for those 5 hours in those videos, like three videos and then two, yeah, so it's 5 hours. He's constantly, nonstop, through all 5 hours, showing every aspect of evolution. They say this happens, and then boom, he takes the Bible and he says, okay, this is what the Bible says happened, and then proves it using science. 5 straight hours he does this. And this man's been doing this for many, many years, and so. But here's some of the things that he brings up. I'm not going to share all the quotes, where they're from and all that. Just for those of you listening on the radio, if you want these quotes, send me an email. I'll send it to you, or I'll just wait a couple, 3 days, and it'll be my newsletter. The fossil record, for example. Evolutionists have constructed the geological column in order to illustrate the supposed progression of primitive life forms to more complex systems we observe today. Yet, since only a small percentage of the Earth's surface obeys even a portion of the geological column, the claim of their having taken place to form a continuum of life, you know, like rock lifetime, you know, in other words, the deeper it is, the older it is, okay, in the dirt. From a continuation of rock lifetime over the Earth is therefore a fantastic and an imaginative contrivance. The lack of transitional series cannot be explained as being due to the scarcity of material. The deficiencies are real. They will never be filled. This supposed column is actually saturated with polystrate fossils. Column, of course, like, now when he says column, it's like, you're standing on top of the Earth, you dig a hole 10 feet deep, you get in a hole, and you can see a wall of dirt that's 10 feet tall. That's the column he's talking about. It's a column of dirt. So you go to the top, it's modern day. You go to the bottom, it's a billion years ago, according to the evolutionists, okay? So this supposed column is actually saturated with polystrate fossils, or fossils extending from one geological layer to the other. You know, kind of like a tree at the bottom and working its way up. And so that tie all the layers to one time frame. To the unprejudiced, the fossil record of plants is in favor of special creation. In other words, for example, like I said, a tree is found rooted in one geological column. Its trunk is in another geological column because the tree is still standing straight up and down, right? But they find the tree buried, and they supposedly it was buried because of billions and billions and billions of years of dust landing on it, right? So what they're trying to tell us is that tree, its trunk is billions of years old, and its roots are, you know, hundreds of billions of years old. The leaves are just a couple of million years old. So it's quite impossible for evolutionists to use that as fact, but it's perfectly understandable for creationists to use that as fact, because that's what happened. All right? The flood. All right, the next one. How about decay of Earth's magnetic field? I always like this one. I use this on the street a lot. And I don't speak it exactly the way he's doing it here because I don't have that kind of a memory. But here, I'll read this to you. It says, Dr. Thomas Barnes, Emeritus Professor of Physics at the University of Texas at El Paso, has published a definitive work in this field. Scientific observations since 1829 have shown that the Earth's magnetic field has been measurably decaying at an exponential rate, demonstrating its half-life to be approximately 1,400 years. In practical application, its strength, 20,000 years ago, in other words, since we know it's going down because we've been checking this out since 1829, so let's just, using the same method that it's been going down, let's just go back in time and let it go up in the same direction, you know, in the same, you know, mode of, you know, exponential, you know, going backwards to see what happens. So they found that, he goes, in practical application, its strength 20,000 years ago would be approximate that of a magnetic star. Under those conditions, many of the atoms necessary for life processes could not form. These data demonstrate that Earth's entire history is young, within a few thousand years. In other words, in as little as 20,000 years ago, it would have been literally impossible to support any kind of life on this planet whatsoever, let alone millions of years ago, like the evolutionists claim. 20,000 years ago, this planet would have been a magnetic star if the magnetic field kept going back up, if we went back in time the way it's been going down since 1829. We've got plenty of time, well over 200 years of data to prove that it's going down in a specific rate. So if it's going down at that rate, that means it was a lot stronger 20,000 years ago. How about the global flood that Noah realized? That they say, oh, there's no, you know, it couldn't have been a global flood, right? The biblical record clearly describes a global flood during Noah's day. Additionally, there are hundreds of flood traditions handed down from cultures all over the world. M. E. Clark and Henry Voss have demonstrated the scientific validity of such a flood, providing the sedimentary layering we see on every continent. Secular scholars report very rapid sedimentation and periods of great carbonate deposits in Earth's sedimentary layers. It is now possible to prove the historical reality of the biblical flood. So, I mean, that's just going on. You find this just about anywhere now. But they're finding fossils inside just tons and tons and tons and, like, you know, tens of hundreds of feet of sediment. And that's going to come from water moving around like that. It's going to move Earth around. This next one is pretty neat, too. Because God said, what was it, in Genesis? Yeah, it's in Genesis. That's the third day, I believe, yeah. Is when he said, let the dry land appear. Now, check this out. Radio halos. Physicist Robert Gentry has reported isolated radio halos of polonium-214 in crystalline granite. And granite is just granite. That's, they call it crystalline granite in the laboratory, but granite's granite, okay? The half-life of this element is 0.000164 seconds. In other words, a lot less time to snap my fingers, okay, is the half-life of a halo, of a radio halo, of polonium-214. To record the existence of this element in such a short time span, the granite must be crystalline in a crystalline state, or rock hard, instantaneously, you know, like the Bible said. This runs counter to evolutionary estimates of 300 million years for the granite to form. Now, in layman's terms, that means radio halo is a radioactive element that's in granite. If it took 300 million years for granite to cool down, then 300 million years ago, polonium-214 would have come and gone, and then would have been totally dispersed through 300 million years of molten granite moving it around, and you wouldn't even see the halos anymore. They would be gone, and it would have been gone 300 million years ago. But if the granite solidifies instantaneously like God said it did, then even that polonium-214 would be seen. And yeah, this is physicist Robert Gentry. Amen. You got that, yeah. And then the last one I got to share here, I'm telling you, there's tons of these, is human artifacts throughout the geological column. And again, the geological column being, the deeper you go, the older it is. They're finding things that are made by man way too deep. Okay? So it says, man-made artifacts such as the hammer in the Cretaceous rock, a human sandal print with trilobite in the Cambrian rock, which is a different time period in the evolutionary scale of things, human footprints and a handprint in Cretaceous rock point to the fact that all the supposed geological periods actually occurred at the exact same time in the recent past. And by the way, I just found this out yesterday. They also found, or maybe I found out, I don't know, they also found an iron cup inside a large lump of coal that they supposedly dated to be 295 million years old. Yet, according to those that deny creationism and the biblical record, mankind wasn't on the planet back then. According to evolutionists, man evolved enough to be able to use a tool to make that cup around 50,000 years ago. So I gotta ask, who made that cup? If it's supposed to be 295 million years old, because if it was in the geological column, forget it, it's inside coal, well, that makes it even older. Because coal's been compressed for billions and billions of years, they say. But yet, scientists have recently made coal and diamonds by compression in a laboratory within hours. So in closing, if ever creationists needed one simple example to prove evolution a lie, it's got to be that duck-billed platypus. This amazing animal has a soft, sensitive bill and lays eggs like a duck. It's got fur like a mammal. It's got both webbed and clawed feet, and it has pockets in its jaws to carry food like a hamster, and a spur on its rear legs, which is poisonous, like a snake's fang. So I got to ask the evolutionists, if evolution is sound, where and what In fact, we're the ancestors of this animal. Bottom line, if the common man that echoes the claims of evolutionary scientists really knew what the founders of this impossible theory believed, they would probably change their minds. I hope and pray that you were blessed by what you heard this day.